Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow with just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Hello everyone, this is your host, Dawn Rosenfeld, and I have a great guest with me tonight, who I'm going to introduce and we'll start talking in a few minutes, Mara Harris. She has a personal experience working with individuals with ABIs. She takes care of them. So we'll get to hear from a caretaker's perspective. And one of the things that she said bothered her most about what she does is all the labels people keep giving. TBI, ABI, what she does. And so she wants to start talking about how these labels are everywhere and what we can do about them. So I'd like to introduce my guest tonight, Mara. Say hello, everybody, Mara.
Hi, everybody. Good evening. It is a pleasure and an honor to be here this evening. And thank you so much for having me and inviting me on to have a casual yet personal conversation about the world and how it affects those of us who don't have a brain injury and yet interface and care for and love those that do have a brain injury, whether we label it as an ABI or a TBI, and why there might even be this difference in the world and how it might cause some confusion for those that don't have brain injury.
Sounds good.
So one of the things, you know, I had the pleasure of meeting you, Demise, several, and I hope it's okay that I can address you as to me this evening, since we met casually in the small town of Vallejo, California, where we spend some of our time. When you and I met, and I'm excited to have our conversation this evening from a very just personal and casual kind of experience. I had the pleasure of meeting you several months ago. We were out socializing and having an experience of after this kind of reopening up after the pandemic. And you and I met in the hallway of this event. And by serendipity, I think, you and I shared a mutual friend. And that mutual friend I knew had a brain injury. And so when we opened up to have that conversation, it was gentle and light and sweet. And I didn't know you yet, but from my interactions with her and then slowly having the conversation, I became curious as to whether you yourself might have a brain injury. And so because I knew that the woman that we were with did, I felt empowered and open to ask you if you yourself had a brain injury. And you let me know that you did. And that began an unfolding of more conversation together, which was really enlightening for me. So one of the things, being a person that does not have a brain injury, one of the things that I asked in our first meeting is, she had referred to her experience as an ABI, and then I think I heard you refer to your experience as a TBI, and that really got me thinking as to why and how in the brain injury community we are working through these two distinct labels and how that might, for someone like myself in wanting to connect to the brain injury community, because I have personal experience and also because I have the ability to recognize some of the unique, kind of behaviors or speech patterns that come through, generally speaking, of people that have or are working and healing with a brain injury. I'm very, very curious to have this discussion together about that particular aspect of how that, one, affects those of you in the brain injury community and working through your injury, and how that then causes you to have to clarify or explain or even separate yourself from those in the community that define their experience as a traumatic brain injury, and then those in the community that are labeling themselves or identifying themselves with an acquired brain injury.
Yes, it is the difference.
Mm-hmm. And for you, so I recall you sharing with me that you have a TBI, and wondering, just in our conversation together, how that came to be your label versus the experience, the personal experience that I have that hopefully we'll talk about a little bit later in our interview together, is my own personal experience with my previous partner who acquired a brain injury.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, when you're walking and you get hit by a tortilla truck, kind of traumatic is an appropriate term, I think. I mean, my brain injury was definitely induced by a traumatic experience. Mm-hmm. And accidents and strokes are traumatic experiences. Mm-hmm. And what you go through afterwards, there's no other way to characterize it, to describe it, rather than trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So I always figured I had a TBI. I mean, I only became aware of ABIs later. You know, people who were born with some genetic diseases,
mm-hmm.
or people who... Because a TBI is an ABI, because
mm-hmm.
you acquire a traumatic brain injury, but you can
mm-hmm.
also acquire a brain injury through something other than trauma.
Mm. Mm. You know, I think that's really interesting in that, and it gives me a moment of pause, because in my own personal experience, and this is where we're opening up from, is, you know, I was in a relationship with my partner, and through a really unforeseen and terrible experience, she was assaulted. And through that assault, she her brain was injured. And it struck me that through the process that we went through, which I look forward to expanding more upon later in our interview, but she had been labeled throughout the experience as having an ABI. And it strikes me that even in the community where we were living at that time, which is in San Diego, California, which I bring that up on purpose because I'll later also want to speak to a very important program that is happening down in San Diego for your listeners to possibly consider or access that might be in the Southern California area or visiting even or know of people that end up coming into the experience of acquiring a brain injury, traumatic or otherwise. but what really struck me, well, it strikes me now as I'm becoming more educated and I'm becoming more aware in my own experience with, you know, reading and then having conversations with people as I open up more of my personal experience from the past of, with a brain-injured person, which, by the way, I just want to say, and I hope we can expand upon this a bit later, is that that I am very, very grateful for the guidance that, again, happened serendipitously, happened by, you know, by luck, happened by chance, not by accident, I guess, but with luck and grace, to have interfaced with people that were educated, and then I was able to be educated through their education and their experience about what happens, and even then labeling the brain injury. And for the moment, I'll just, I think until we continue to break apart these label brain injury and traumatic brain injury, because honestly, I think I would feel most comfortable personally calling it an acquired traumatic brain injury.
Now that's what I haven't heard yet.
Right. Well, but you know, I mean, when it comes to labels, people like to shorten things up, but I would say any brain injury, as long as it was not, brought on at birth, it holds some level of trauma for those that are going through the brain injury and even for those that are on the outside assisting the process. For
you're
those
probably
that
correct.
Have.
Yeah, because I mean, the first time I heard the term acquired brain injury, I was like, yeah, well, you acquire it, so it's yours. It's part of you after that. There's nothing that can ever change that, and it's yours.
Mm.
And people deal with it differently.
And I think the word trauma is actually an important one to apply to any brain injury experience. As you said, that the radical life changes that occur both externally and internally are so, you know, such a, it can be, and I am speaking generally, of course, but it can be such a life-altering that from point A to point Z, you know, moving in such big leaps of experiencing oneself from the inside and the outside in that big of a leap and that big of a shift is traumatic.
Yes, it is. But then there are cases of people who are born with conditions like hydrocephalus that affect the brain, but you never know any other way to be, because you just grow up thinking in those terms, knowing you have that and everything's filtered through that label.
Mm-hmm. Right, and then I would in the, just going along with this conversation here, that you know that the leap, it's like if one is born with that in, you know, that brain, let's call it brain defect, and
condition.
I apologize if that is, yep, condition, thank you, that born with that brain condition. See, even this process of educating other people in their language is so important, right?
Yeah.
So with that brain condition, that leap of, you know, as you said, one is born with that, and then one knows no other thing, and so one traverses life, you know, moving through that understanding of oneself as opposed to someone that has not been born with that brain condition, then acquires through oftentimes, I would say anyway, would be traumatic, whether it's through some level of fever or some level, you know, whether
yeah.
the experience of the brain happens internally or externally, it's still moving leaps and bounds, and that kind of change for any one person is, I think, traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
And so
yeah.
I do think that in this conversation around what do we label, and really, you know, the question of what do we label others or ourselves is really important, because it shapes our understanding of how we want to be seen by others and or how we want others to see us.
Yes. Very, very true.
And I think I learned that most clearly in my own personal experience with my partner, who went through so we were together and she was not a brain injured person, and then this traumatic event occurred. It was an assault. And she, ever from that point, was a different person. And
mm-hmm.
so that shift of self, that shift of, you know, for herself, going from point A to Z in her experience of herself, and then my experience of her going from point A to point Z, I mean, that big leap caused quite a bit of trauma in our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do feel that if we were given from the onset of that assault and that change that it caused in her brain, to apply the word traumatic brain injury, I think it would have given both her as an individual and those of us around her trying to navigate the changes a kind of almost vilification of how
mm-hmm.
intense the journey was.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I heard the term traumatic brain injury long before I ever heard of the term acquired brain injury.
Mm.
Although in most cases, they are interchangeable.
Mm.
But I tend to think of TBI as a subcategory of ABI, because ABI can cover a lot more things.
Mm. Well, perhaps why then, because, you know, I'm also coming from, I am not a clinician. I'm merely a person that has had my own personal experience with someone that was not brain injured, to then having a traumatic experience that caused the brain injury. And so, and then from that point on, being someone that had traversed a relationship with someone that then had acquired a traumatic brain injury, and then interfacing with others in a new community that we worked with because of her acquired traumatic brain injury.
Mm-hmm.
So, and from that experience, as I had started this conversation, we were given the language of acquired brain injury versus later on, actually in these last months, really interfacing with you and the friend that I met you through, utilizing the word traumatic brain injury. And that's where my shift of understanding has really happened, is in the use and the changing of the use of that label.
Yes. I mean, some of it might be just what's going on in the world around us at any particular moment. Because this partner you had, who had ABI, if you don't mind my asking, when was that?
Mm-hmm. So that experience was about 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if maybe perhaps in the brain injured community, if over these 15 years, if we are starting to mature or shift in the way that we're understanding this as a community.
That's very interesting, because mine was, what, 35 years ago, almost.
Mm.
Yeah, 40 years ago. I mean, and, you know, maybe there have been some changes. That's just what they called it in the hospital after it happened, in the neuropsych intensive care ward I was in. And that's just what it's been called to my mind ever since. It's like gotten involved with this community, the one on this radio, and through the websites for traumatic brain injuries, and the way the people classify themselves. I mean, I've met someone who has been on my show, as a matter of fact. She has what she calls an acquired brain injury. She doesn't call it traumatic. Again, it's something that she was born with. And so I kind of assumed that was part of the difference, but maybe there's more to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did do, before your show, I did do a little bit of, not intensive, but I did do a little bit of querying on the computer because I was interested in understanding what the difference for a brain injured person in terms of accessing resources and what kind of assistance can be found in the world if they are utilizing or querying on the computer the difference between TBI versus ABI. I will say that there is at least at in my experience, there is more immediate, it appears as if there's more immediate assistance to be had and resources to be had when we are utilizing the word traumatic brain injury as opposed to ABI. I was not finding in my query as many state or county or even federal assistance. So it may be that, you know, I would think that in the healthcare world, that utilizing the word traumatic may also get people's attention quicker, you know, and whether people or personally or even programmically, there seems to be access for those that are given the label or choosing the label TBI.
Well, that's very interesting because I would think a part of it would be because of the brain images they've done on football players and found the evidence, which they classified under TBI, of, chronic encephalopathy, people who've been banged in the head so many times that their brain physically changes and their personalities change. Mm-hmm. And I've always heard that called a TBI.
Mm-hmm. This is actually a great segue into for me, being able to open up a conversation around my personal experience with the partner that I had at the time. And she was assaulted. And that assault, although she did have some bleeding to the head, the skull was intact. And so I think in that assessment, which also, by the way, did become a legal issue, we ended up having to traverse the legal system because, unfortunately, the assault was caused by three male police officers. So just to give some personal background of our experience, it was an assault that then led to a legal battle in the courts in terms of
That's so hard.
Yep. It was tremendously difficult. But that actually didn't come. That event of taking it into the legal system didn't actually come until months and months and months after the event itself. So my partner was assaulted. She was taken to the emergency room and then treated for a concussion. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until later investigation that they were willing to determine it as an acquired brain injury. And I wonder if for legal reasons that they didn't actually label it as a TBI, but as an ABI. I would love to invite you, Demi, to have a lawyer on your podcast here, your radio show, to discuss those ramifications of, in a court of law, if there is a difference that the court sees or even makes determinations based on the difference between those two labels of an ABI versus a TBI. So I'm excited to invite you to possibly find someone in the brain injury community that could address that. I'm certainly interested in hearing that conversation.
So am I.
Next show. Yeah. But anyway, again, speaking from just a lay person, from my own personal experience. So what ended up happening, and I'll tell you, for those of you that are in the brain injured community, I just want to speak, and those of you that are supportive, I want to say allies, because I consider myself an ally of the brain injured community. For those of us that are allies, and for those of us that have acquired or are working with a brain injury, I'll say to always keep hope, and an open heart, because I would say it's that very thing that really changed our experience from something becoming simply traumatic from the assault to then becoming something that opened up to a, you know, luckily a beautiful experience because we were able to identify the effects as a brain injury after the assault. And the reason that we were blessed, if you allow me to say that, is that serendipitously we had a friend. This was in the San Diego, California area at the time, who actually worked at the community college of Mesa College in the San Diego area. And she is a recreational therapist for the acquired brain injury clinic at Mesa College. And because we had that friend, after my partner was assaulted, this is months and months, mind you, this is months after the assault, she recognized some of the patterns in my partner that were, again, that leap from A to Z, you know, those personal cognitive and personality changes that can occur from a brain injury. She was able to recognize those changes. I wasn't able to recognize them because I wasn't educated enough, but she was able to recognize those shifts in my partner's behavior, my partner's cognition or thinking patterns, and then was able to lead us into the resources and lead us into a community that was able to extend their hand and their knowledge to us that really allowed us to grow and to heal and to be educated.
Mm-hmm. So why don't you talk a little bit about that program at San Diego Mesa College, the recreational therapist within. Can you tell us a little bit about that program?
I will. It is, and it's something I think even if your listeners are not in the San Diego area, which I'm sure most of them are not, but it is something to look at and to research because it has become an exemplary program. And I think that as the non-brain injured world begins to take notice of the brain injured world, that we will have more programs that will open up of this caliber and of this, let's say, well, holistic and well-rounded programming. So this is the Acquired Brain Injury Program at Community Education of Mesa College. So it is the San Diego College of Continuing Education, Mesa College. And I could, the website, if anyone is interested, is www.sdbce.edu at Mesa College. So one of the things that that a program like this was able to offer, which was the biggest, was really recognizing the aspects that were changed in my partner who had then, after the brain injury, a huge shift in not only her cognition, her thinking capacities, but also in her emotional self, and also the way that she thought of herself really changed. I think from the outside, being a person relating to somebody with a new experience of themselves, it was really hard for us to, recognize these transitions that were taking place over the course of months. You know, it's not, I don't know how many for those of you with brain injury experiences, that, you know, it's not just that your being, your personhood changes, you know, at a blink of an eye, although it does. I'm not saying that it doesn't, but there are also residual effects. At least that's what we noticed in our personal experience, is that the brain injury caused residual effects over, you know, it was a short amount of time, and then as more and more time passed from the initial traumatic, the acquired traumatic brain injury, it was interesting to, yeah, it was interesting to observe changes over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it really was the assistance of not only the community that was involved at the acquired brain injury program. So there is a community of people going through the program who are brain injured. And then there is the support staff outside of, and most of those people themselves are not brain injured, but are educated about brain injury. And it was through those, both of those layers, layers of people that had brain injury and layers of people that were educated about brain injury, that really helped us to grow and learn and to become more compassionate.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sounds, yeah, because the whole concept of brain injury is, I mean, it's been around, it's been with us a long time, but the actually labeling the people has become something new,
mm-hmm.
something recent.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think, yes.
And I think that's why, you know, there's some confusion about the terms. People don't really know what it is or what happens or what to call, because we're still just at the beginning stages of finding out.
You know, I one of the things that I, as you just said that, is, you know, one of the things that I want to highlight is in the evolution that seems to be taking place as more people are becoming sensitive, more people are becoming educated about the effects. It's not just the physical brain effect, but the whole person that that needs to be addressed. And, you know, the title of your show, that we deserve better. Yeah, those with that are working through the trauma of a brain injury, that the whole person needs to be considered. And that's where I feel where my partner and I, through a program like the Acquired Brain Injury Program at Mesa College in San Diego, was and is so successful. They are addressing the whole person. It is not just speech language pathologists or rehabilitation counselors, but people that are addressing the way people are with brain injuries are feeling, the way, you know, there's psychology involved in terms of looking at the way we're feeling, the way that we perceive ourselves and how to work through that with compassion and joy, if there can be found joy through accepting the newness of oneself. Almost, you know, one of the concepts that we were given is this idea of looking at her as if she were being reborn. And that idea, reborn.
Oh.
Right? It's almost as if is a new being, a new person, being reborn, that kind of lightened our hearts, lightened our attitude around the whole experience was as she was going through the counseling and as she was going through the support of the program in so many different aspects that we were given this idea, this concept, to look at the experience as if she were being reborn. And that also invited me as her support person, as her partner at the time, to even consider how I might be going through a rebirth, rather than feeling like we were just at a loss. We were given the idea of perhaps this could be seen as a rebirth, and in that rebirth, what could we discover?
It is a rebirth, but some of the aspects are still the same as the old person or persons.
It is a very careful dance we want to do, right? It is such a very careful dance, because we don't want to only highlight the changes. We also want to acknowledge the root of the person that is still present, the heart, the soul of the person, the spirit of the person that's still present as a brain injured person is going through their re-identification, their maybe that's too strong of a term, but as we were given the term of rebirthing parts of themselves, rebirthing maybe the way their brain, because sometimes starting over, if there is a loss in a certain parts of cognition, or even a certain level of challenge in how we experience our emotional self, that to look at that experience as if we are coming at it from a new angle, a new perspective, which is kind of like a rebirth, felt very refreshing to us.
So that helped her process the whole experience better then.
Somehow it brought, you know, because there is so much, you know, at least witnessing her on the outside, there was so much that she was angry about. There was so much that she had felt grief about, and there was so much that she felt hurt about, both emotionally and physically hurt, through the process of going through this acquired traumatic brain injury, that when something traumatic happens, we, you know, whether it's happening personally or we're witnessing it, we do have these stages of moving through, like layers of an onion. First, just going through the initial impact of shock, and then once we're able to move from that epicenter of shock, then perhaps our intensity softens a little, and then we can move into another layer of now feeling loss or grief. But I think for her, even before that loss and grief occurred, she had to work through her anger. And I had to work through my anger as well, my upset, my feeling of shock and anger. Yeah, it was really the first layer, I think, for both of us.
It's very interesting. I didn't particularly feel anger after my accident, just because I've always been an optimistic person. I tend to think, well, I'm going to get better. This is a minor setback. And that's all I could view it as. Then when I went to some groups, you know, years later, and met some people who were still angry about the specific incident that caused the brain injury. And they couldn't go on with their lives because they were stuck in that part where they were blaming the other person. the driver, the person, whatever. And, well, you're not going to heal unless you get through that.
Mm.
And learning how to get through it, I guess, is the big issue, because I found that in the groups I attended, that many people were stuck on the day of the incident when their life changed.
Mm. I would say for us in the unfolding of the layers of the experience that, you know, one of the most challenging moments was the initial shock, which almost it's like that freeze experience doesn't just happen in the moment of the injury itself, but for those of us on the outside, for those of us that are allies to those that have brain injuries, you know, we also experience that initial shock. I think the explosive feelings of shock can be traumatizing themselves. And one of the things I'm really grateful for is the guidance and the support that we were able to receive through this acquired brain injury clinic, and of people that have been assisted through those layers of feeling, layers of experience, really is the gift. And one of the things that I'm excited to share with your listeners tonight, with my own, from my own personal experience, is that that journey that was taken from the initial point of shock, and then anger that certainly occurred. I mean, there's always a question of why, or at least it seems that that is often a question for those that are experiencing some kind of trauma. And then from that, and I do find that time away from the initial point of injury or shock helps to soften the impact a little. It doesn't take care of it all, but it certainly helps to soften the intensity is time and talking about it and being able to share about the experience. That's why I think something like your radio show this evening is so important, is that we just get the opportunity to listen to one another. We get the opportunity to share our personal experience, from whether it's the inside of a brain injury or those of us that are allies on the outside, because it helps to soften that initial impact, however long ago it happened. And I think that's what I definitely, as an advocate, as a ally of those that have experienced brain injury, that, you know, like the experience I had with meeting you months ago was so refreshing to me, because I felt, because I knew the woman that we were with, I knew she and I had already opened up the conversation about her experience with a brain injury. And there were some, I would say, some cues that I was able to see, either in your speech pattern or just the way that you interacted with her, that gave me a bit of a curiosity as to whether you might have also had the experience of a brain injury. Mm-hmm. And so I asked, and then that really opened up for a friendship and a connection between you and I, because we were able to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, as an ally, as someone from the outside that does not have a brain injury, but has experience from the outside looking in, there are some cues, not always, but there can be cues that those of us that can, if we're sensitive and if we're paying attention and if we're, you know, we're keeping our awareness open, we can see that those that are working through the healing process of their brain injury, we can relate to, we can connect, we can ask, and we can then feel from the ask a connection and a softening from those with the brain injury. We feel invited to talk about it. We feel invited to have a more personal interfacing with those that have had the experience, because there is simply an invitation to talk about it instead of pretending like it's not there.
Very interesting.
I was just going to say for those that are listening tonight and for those that have experienced brain injury from the inside, that if there's been any doubt as to whether or not to open up conversation about your experience, I want to say from the outside, as an advocate and as an ally, I want to say please share, please reveal what has happened to you. It really allows those of us on the outside to address you with curiosity, to address you with patience, to address you with compassion, and to also feel that conversation as an invitation to be connected. And I think that level of connection makes all the difference for all of us in working together and being together and living in a world that is constantly shifting, brain injured or not.
Very interesting, Mara, because I wonder if that's your particular experience talking or anybody would be as open to it as you appear to be.
Well, it may be some influence. I mean, certainly the influence, because I had my own personal experience with my partner going through her acquired traumatic brain injury. I certainly am a more enlightened, educated person. So in that regard, I want to find gratitude for the experience, because it's given me a level of compassion and a level of awareness that I wouldn't have had otherwise. I don't think, to me, that I would have recognized or been sensitive to the patterns that I was witnessing in our friend that day when we met, and even you, had I not had the personal experience. So I do think there is, certainly from my own personal experience, there is a certain level of sensitivity that I've acquired. And yet, as an advocate and as a ally, I want to keep encouraging those of us that are in relationship to those that have a brain injury to keep sharing about it and to keep opening up conversation around it, so that we can, you know, one by one affect other people by educating. You know, I feel like that's, you know, like a talk show like this is so important, because we are giving each other the opportunity to consider other people's experience. And when we do that, I know for myself, I become more sensitive and more compassionate, and then I have more ability to connect.
Very interesting. So I just want to ask right here, if anyone is listening tonight and has a particular question for either Mara or myself, please jump on the radio and ask. You basically call in 424-243-9540. Once you call that number, press 1. And I'll see your phone number pop up, and I'll know that this particular phone number, the person calling has a question. So if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question for your own experience or your own just wondering, please feel free to call in 424-243-9540 and press 1 and ask the question. But if you're not listening tonight, if you're listening later, and you would be interested in talking to Mara, asking her about the San Diego Mesa College program, please, Mara, could you tell people how to find that, or maybe get in touch with you to find that?
Yes. So in regards to, and whether you're in the San Diego area or not, this is still something to look up and to see the kinds of support that are being given to those with what they are labeling as acquired brain injured. And at the beginning of this this radio show, we were having the conversation around the difference or what the effect between acquired brain injury and or labeling it as a traumatic brain injury. And I this evening have been using acquired traumatic brain injury. you know, it's like, let's, it, you know, because any brain injury is that isn't, that doesn't happen at birth is acquired. And then it's, you know, whether, and I think any brain injury that happens after birth becomes to some degree traumatic because our sense mm-hmm. that change can be traumatic in itself. So the San Diego College of Continuing Education, it is www.sdcce.edu/services/D as in dog, S as in Sam, P as in people and S as in Sam, /ABI. Or you can just Google acquired brain injury clinic, San Diego. That's another option that might be simpler. I can be reached via email at yogaexplorer, yogaexplorer, @gmail.com, and I would be pleased to receive your emails if you have any questions or comments in regards to my personal experience that I'm sharing tonight on We Deserve Better.
Yes, and Mara, along those lines, can you tell us what happened after you two did this therapy through this San Diego Mesa College Institute?
Mm-hmm. I would say one of the biggest and most helpful change was just in our understanding. So that level of education not only provided real significant support for my partner who had had the assault, which then caused which was the cause of her acquired traumatic brain injury. So there was emotional support, there was community support of other people that were going through initial stages of dealing with their brain injury. So just being in a community of people that were going through similar experiences that she was, that in itself helped to bring a kind of normalization to her. Now for me personally, being on the outside, witnessing her, I would say emotion, on the emotional level of changes, I'm not sure, if your listeners are aware of the concept of perseveration.
Why don't you
right?
go on a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, On an emotional level, now this is not specific to brain injured people, but it is and can be a very specific experience of people with brain injury, which is this idea of perseveration. Now, with her particular effects of her acquired traumatic brain injury, she would have what I, you know, from the outside looking in, it seemed as if she was experiencing emotional outbursts. And one of the things that would happen, either if she, you know, if she was triggered, if I can say that, so maybe something that I said, or if the way that I asked a question, or if something didn't happen the way that she expected, she would go into this emotional loop. And that emotional loop is called perseveration. Mm-hmm. And when a brain-injured person, or anyone really, that of that matter, goes through the experience of perseveration, we are having a difficult time in the moment of being able to slow down that emotional loop, slow down that bind of being in the intensity of that emotion. And so perseveration is a term that I learned through the acquired brain injury clinic at Mesa mm-hmm. College in San Diego. And just having that term helped me to understand that her inability to disengage from certain emotional feelings, certain emotional responses were not personal to me. And I could also have compassion with her in the moment that I, you know, was given some tools to either help de-escalate or help slow down that spiral or that cycle of consistent connection to that emotion that was, again, called perseveration. So had I not had that understanding or that term, so I'll share, and maybe some of your listeners can relate to this. Before we, again, we were, you know, this is my partner. We were in an intimate relationship together. And, you know, we would, like any relationship, we would have disagreements or arguments. But after the brain injury, the nature of our disagreements and the nature of our arguments became much more intense and much more challenging. And I will say even there were moments where it became scary for me. And this is because of the effect of the brain injury, which I was talking about, of perseveration, that she was unable to disengage on her own from the intensity of the feeling. So if she was triggered, this was, again, after the brain injury happened, she was showing these signs of perseveration. And those signs are the inability to disengage from a strong emotional feeling.
Very interesting. I say very interesting because as a child growing up, long before my brain injury per se, my father used to always accuse me of perseverating on everything.
Right.
I mean, it's very possible I was born with some sort of brain injury because my, you know, chiropractically I can say, yes, I definitely was. My top of my neck was all screwed up. And I didn't realize that till later. But I'm just wondering if that's a part of the brain not working right, the perseveration.
I do think that, and in my personal experience and from some of the education I received, I think that experience of perseveration, I mean, we human beings have, you know, levels of emotional intensity. We all do. Something happens, right? We're triggered. We have a feeling about it. And most people that have a certain level of maturity, I think, but most people are able to have the emotional experience and then either think or talk themselves through that emotional experience and then can bring themselves out of the intensity of that emotion and then can start to calm down. But for someone that is working with a brain injury, and I'm speaking in general, this is not the case for every brain injured person, as we know. But there is the experience, or can be the experience, of not having the same capacity to regulate one's feelings. And this, again, that terminology is perseveration. And so when we are not able on our own to disengage from that emotional loop, we are in a state of perseveration. And it is with certain kinds of coaxing, certain kinds of, so if my partner, after the brain injury, if she would go into this perseveration or into this emotional looping, and I would stay at a high level of upset, if I didn't realize that we were in this, you know, that it wasn't just her being up, you know, it wasn't like our old experience of just being upset or angry. No, she was actually in a state of emotional loop. And if I continued to relate to her with emotional intensity, she could not change her level of emotional intensity. So me, being the non-brain injured person and being someone that doesn't have that particular brain effect of perseveration, it was then my responsibility, my experience, to recognize what kind of emotional state she was in, slow down the way I was speaking, shift the intensity of my speech, and to come intentionally in a much softer way to help her, and also myself, but really help her to break up that pattern of the emotional intensity. And it can just be as simple as coming at that moment with calmness, coming at that moment with slower rhythm. And, you know, and I would say that learning has certainly helped me, not just with those that are going through a brain injury, but with anyone. So I would say as an ally, right? I would say, you know, being someone that has gone through from the outside, witnessing and going through the education process and going through the support process with someone that has had a brain injury, I'm actually a better person for it from the outside. And again, finding some gratitude through trauma is really one of the greatest gifts that I can say that I've gotten from this.
Very interesting. So just out of curiosity, is that what you noticed about me the first time we met? You said you were wondering.
Yes, that I had some curiosity when you and I first met. And a part of it is, at least, and I hope I can be personal here, is you're right, is you, at least in my experience of you, because I want to take responsibility for my own experience, but my experience of you is your cadence and your rhythm is not always fluid. Sometimes it can be a little choppy. Even some of your movements, your gestures can be, not always, but they had a little bit of choppiness to them. And I felt, or my experience of our friend, which is how we met, and I'm just to honor her anonymity. I'm not using her name, so she's just our friend. But she also has some unique cadence in her speech and in her movement patterns. And I would say that also my partner, who, you know, from the point when we were together and she didn't have the brain injury, I witnessed her and experienced her in this kind of rhythm and cadence physically and speech-wise. And then after the brain injury, that physicality and that speech pattern became less fluid. It was a little more choppy, if you will. And so that has been some of my experience with those that are going and working through and healing with their brain injury.
That's fascinating. No one's ever described that aspect of my behavior, but I'm not at all surprised to hear you say that. Not at all surprised. It's something I've kind of noticed myself without really putting it into a coherent thought like you're doing here.
And, you know, I mean,
yes.
I was going to say, now again, I am not a clinician. I am a lay person.
Yes.
So I just, whoever's, you know, to please consider my,
yeah. Like that.
But I would say my, you know, because of this experience, partner having gone through her own healing process with the brain injury and then also being exposed to others at this acquired brain injury clinic. So being surrounded by a number, you know, a larger community of people that were also healing dealing with and healing from their brain injury, that is in part some of, I would say, again, generally speaking and from a layperson's perspective, that would be some of what I would say is witnessable, is that those with brain injury have a unique cadence, not only in gesture but also movement, but also in speech. Now, of course, it is not the same for everyone, because depending on which part of the brain has been injured, a brain injury will show up in an individual very differently. But oftentimes I think, or my assumption from what I know, because the brain is working through, it's almost like the cogs in the wheel are not as greased. And so, right? So it's
yeah.
Almost like as if the synapses working have to find their way around the brain injury. And so as, you know, for those of you that have been working on your brain injury and working on repatterning movement or repatterning speech, that, you know, again, from a layman's perspective, it almost as if the brain needs a couple of extra seconds to move around the injury and connect with the new synapses. And so that's my layperson's kind of imagination of what's happening for a brain injury.
No, that's a great picture, great term, because I've noticed that in some of my behavior, you know, I've been noticing that, and yeah, maybe I never noticed it before because I hadn't had the brain injury before.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting to hear you say that, because like you're putting into words a lot of the things I've seen in other people and seen in myself.
I also to share, I have 20 years in the movement arts. So I spent 20 years as a yoga teacher. I spent 20 years as a contact improv dancer and movement person. I was able to make my living in that way. And so I have a very trained eye, or I've spent those 20 years really looking at the move and cadence and rhythm. And, you know, I mean, not every person is fluid, that is for sure. And so I think, right? So being a chiropractor, you know that, especially if someone is going through some kind of pain, you know, it's like the more pain or more trauma that we're working on or working through or healing from, things become disjointed. And so in that disjointedness, however obvious or however faint, it's present. And for those of us that are really paying attention, we can see the lack of fluidity. And when that lack of fluidity is there, my trained eye says, it's curious. It says, what's up? What's going on there? And I think, right? And I think that's really where, when you and I met, that's where I was coming from. That trained eye within me was going, what's going on here? What is that? These little subtle cues I'm getting. And then, of course, making assumptions because I knew the friend that you were with had a brain injury. And so I was bold enough to ask you if you had experienced a brain injury yourself. And of course, from my place of curiosity and innocence and desire to connect, I asked. And thus we were making a good connection out of all this, which is really, really really a blessing. It's really a good thing.
Wow. Very interesting. Yeah, because as a chiropractor, I definitely watch the way people move, and there are differences among people. Big time. And, it's just very interesting. It's just something that I hadn't heard anyone make that connection before.
You know, one of the other things that I was interested in sharing is I also, from again, my personal experience is how the world, you know, not that I have any answers and not that I expect for us to have any answers, but just in opening up the conversation, you know, I have a girlfriend, a friend who currently a friend who is now in her mid-60s, which is still very young, right? She's in her mid-60s. Yeah, I'm an advocate. I'm not an ageist. I am definitely, I want to encourage us to keep living large no matter what label of age we're at, you know? I currently have a friend who is going through an experience of what I'm calling right now is cognitive shifts. Cognitive shifts. And what I'm curious about in witnessing this personal experience with my friend is that we've, as these cognitive, so I've known her for many years, and it's only recently in the last 2 years that she is starting to show signs of cognitive shift. And in sharing my personal experience with people, particularly my partner and then also the community at ABI, the Acquired Brain Injury Clinic, you know, I started opening up to her about my experience with brain injury, and I said, you know, your cognitive shifts, you know, whatever the doctors and whatever the health world wants to call this, are very much similar in my experience of you as those that I've experienced with brain injury. And the reason I want to bring this up is I think to put the pieces together here is she is not, she had in her youth several concussions from skiing accidents. And here she is now in her 60s, her middle 60s, and those concussions were never acknowledged or diagnosed. Right. I mean, she did, you know, go to the go to the doctor for, you know, having injured her wrist, but also hitting her head, and they addressed the wrist but didn't address the head. Now, again,
yeah.
This is 40 years ago, you know, and I think our healthcare system is starting to have a different kind of treatment and understanding for the sensitivity of brain, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
But the reason I bring her up is because I think it opens up a conversation around these cognitive shifts that occur in our lives. And for those of us that have brain injuries, or for those of us that consider ourselves allies to the brain injured, I think we can, as we have people surrounding us aging and shifting in their cognitive capacity, really help people have a much more thoughtful, a much more graceful kind of transition. I see those of us that are allies to those with brain injury and those that have had and gone through their own, you know, are healing from their, with their brain injury. I feel like we are people that can help the greater population that is aging and moving through these cognitive shifts to approach their experience with more compassion and a lighter heart. So whether we're, because we're all going to experience cognitive shifts in our life. Some of us, unfortunately, have to go through it in one big, large impact, like an acquired traumatic brain injury. But we will all at some point go through some kind of cognitive shift. And so I'm curious and want to encourage the brain injury community to see the value of their experience, of our experience, as almost like we could be beacons of light for those that will be experiencing their cognitive shifts later in life. You know, it's like, I'm interested in that, how the acquired brain injury, the acquired traumatic brain injury community could be a beacon of light and understanding and compassion for the bigger community at large. You know, for those that will experience cognitive shifts later in life. Yeah,
that's very
interesting.
Maybe
there's something more on that.
Because, the population is aging, and there is going to be a cognitive shifting going on. And it is something interesting to think about.
You know, one of the things that as an advocate and as an ally, you know, coming from that perspective, okay, so if we've just admitted that, you know, our society is going to be moving towards cognitive shifts as we are an aging society, right, as more people are aging, that means we will likely, the probability of each one of us coming into contact with people with changing cognition is going to increase. And whether we have a brain injury or not, if we can just approach each other more compassionately, just slowing down, just being more observant, listening first before we get in there and just speak, I think we can create a more compassionate, you know, community as a whole. You know, and this is contrasted by our younger generation that is experiencing technology that is, you know, almost screaming at them to go faster, harder, more with their technology, you know? So maybe those of us in the middle here, the brain injured and the allies of the brain injured, we can kind of hold down a happy medium and help those that are moving into their later years and shifting cognitively to have more compassion, more understanding with themselves, and we can turn around to the youth of our more mainstream community and say, hey, guys, slow down. There's no need to, you know, push harder, faster, more, at least in our interpersonal relationships.
Yeah, I think you might have a point there. You should definitely be pushing for that on a national level, Mara.
Yeah, I think there's a TED Talk in there.
Yeah, maybe. Seriously,
maybe.
More people should be aware of this. Because most people, like if you hadn't been with someone who had a brain injury, and so you wouldn't be as aware of things as you are.
That's right. And so in I mean, to, you know, to turn, what do they say, make lemonade out of lemons, you know, I mean, right? The best that I can see out of this is that I have become more sensitive and better educated because of my own personal experience with having to support someone through an acquired traumatic brain injury.
If you don't mind my asking, what happened to her and that relationship? You don't have to answer if you don't want to.
No, I think it's a good, I know from personal experience and then also, again, being in the community at the acquired brain injury clinic there and being around others that had, you know, by having conversations with those that were going through their acquired traumatic brain injury and hearing stories of how their interpersonal relationships were changing. I mean, that in itself, that aspect for a person with a brain injury, that the interpersonal relationships shift, whether it's, you know, a romantic relationship or it's friendships or work relationships, those things change and shift, and it requires people from the outside of the brain injured person to shift with them. And not a lot of people are educated enough to be able to do that in a graceful way. So oftentimes arguments occur, misunderstandings occur, challenges of that nature on an interpersonal level occur. And so I'm one of those people that had had a relationship with someone that acquired a traumatic brain injury, and our romantic personal relationship changed and unfortunately ended. I can't 100% say it was because of the brain injury, because we were having, you know, some difficulty before the brain injury. So I think the brain injury experience for us amplified some of the difficulties we were having. But again, going back to that concept of perseveration, after the brain injury, my partner really struggled with being able to regulate her emotional state. And, you know, being on the outside of that and having to continually relate to somebody that was struggling to regulate their own emotional state, that can become very tiring.
yeah.
Right?
So I can understand that, just because my husband, I'm his fourth wife, and I'm he had his head injury, his brain injury, when he was 10 years old. So it's been with him this whole time. But I'm the only one of the bunch who has also had a brain injury.
Oh,
so
wow.
We understand each other.
Wow, so you are you're a married brain injured couple.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
Right. So, well, if I can ask you a personal question, we'll turn the interview around for a moment, but just to ask you the question, how do you feel that creates a unique bond for you and your husband, both of you, healing with a brain injury?
Well, most of the time, that's not discussed per se, but
sure,
it's there. We both know it. We take turns supporting each other when one of us goes off the deep end.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And we
both understand
what's going on.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a level of internal compassion is so strong for
exactly.
you.
Exactly. The non-brain injured, his previous wives, they had no idea what he was going through.
Mm-hmm.
On his inner life. I mean, they had some idea on his outer life. I mean, being a pipe fitter welder and, you know, being cranky and upset and being poisoned in, you know, plants, industrial plants, whatever. But
mm-hmm.
they didn't see what he was going through on the inside because of that brain injury.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think we both have a basic understanding that, yeah, what's going on with the person isn't the end of the world because, you know, it's okay. You know, we'll get through it. But maybe in a way that other people don't have, we can both understand that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I see my husband just walked in the room and he's grinning in the background.
Right? So that just having that understanding and that compassion for each other can bring some levity, some lightness, and some... You know, you can laugh at these moments that can be really intense.
Yes,
you
can definitely laugh at them. I mean, because when, you know, Bob needs a, you know, we handle the, you know, when the aspects of the brain injury get really intense, we know that it's often because a chiropractic upper cervical adjustment's needed. So we can
mm-hmm.
adjust each other since we're both chiropractors and make all the difference in the world. And when I start perseverating or being really obnoxious and awful, he just lays me down and gives me an adjustment.
Right.
He knows that I need my head put back in the place the way we know how to do it. And it's usually... seems to work because we've been together for at least some years.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to take what you just said and make a metaphor out of that because, you know, for those listeners that are brain injured and have partners that are not, and hopefully there are some of those allies, as I like to call myself, I'm an ally to the brain injured community, ally. And an advocate, and you know, for those of us, even though if I can't be my partner's chiropractor, literally making physical adjustments, I can certainly, with my sense of compassion and slowing the pace down, I can help to make a emotional adjustment. I mean, that is one of the things that I was able to learn from the education and the experience. Of the ABI program is as an ally, as a non-brain injured person, is to make those adjustments. You know, if I'm not a chiropractor, I can't make that cervical spine adjustment, but I can make, like a metaphor, I can make an adjustment to my partner's, my acquired traumatic brain injured partner's state of being by slowing things down, by asking questions, not too many, by the way, but asking, right? That's the other thing is for those that don't have brain injuries, you know, we start throwing out all these questions and we can really create a lot of confusion. So just slowing things down, breathing and taking a calmer state of being can be like that chiropractic adjustment.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yes, because emotional problems are just as real as physical ones.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And my gosh, I would say that's probably good advice for any relationship, that you brain injured or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here we are giving relationship advice out. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Mm.
No, it's very interesting, and I was just noticing something you wrote here about what you were, you know, what you do and what you're going to talk about tonight that I incorporated into the introduction. I just said that is a gift that those with ABI have for the rest of the world, or supposedly normal. The crucial factor is to slow life down.
Yeah, I think for those, again, if we are making lemonade out of lemons, if for those that are working through that particular stage of their acquired traumatic brain injury, of that initial state of shock, or if there's still a sense of holding on to the anger and the shock that this traumatic brain injury has caused, that one of the things that those that are going through their acquired traumatic brain injury, that there is you with the brain injury are a gift to those of us that don't have a brain injury, because you are teaching us, you are even just from the nature of it, demanding us to be in a state of compassion. If we are going to have deeper connections, if we are going to have more enlivened and juicier relationships, then, you know, those with the acquired traumatic brain injury hold for us the gift of reminding the rest of us to slow down, to be in a state of patience. Just, and I hope no one is offended by this, I mean it in the best way, but just like a parent would be with their child, we would want the parent to be in a state of compassion and patience, to slow life down for that child. I think that those of us that don't have the brain injury, if we think of ourselves as allies to the brain injured, and just slow life down, just keep things simple, clear, and to remain in a state of curiosity, we will find the depth of our connection, and we will find meaningful relationship, whether it's romantic or friendship or work relationship. We can do that together.
A lot to think about here from the things you just said. It's like someone who knows all about it without having gone through it. I mean, what a nice gift for the brain injured community.
I do know, and I'm gonna hype up the acquired brain injury clinic down there in San Diego, because I do, for those of you that are listening, that are healing from your acquired traumatic brain injury, and if you have never gotten support, if you've never had the experience of going through your brain injury with the support of caring, understanding, educated people around you, this acquired brain injury program, which you can, not everyone has these kinds of resources, but let's just imagine that you are able to have the resources to attend one of their 6 to 8 week programs and feel that kind of support. I would say if there's any way that someone with an acquired traumatic brain injury could access this this ABI program, the level of education, the level of support, not only around the physicality of the brain injury, but also things like, you know, expressive writing and public speaking are addressed, stress management and yoga and crafts, drawing, independent projects are addressed, critical issues, adjustment to the disability and relationships are addressed. All of these things are in the acquired brain injury curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
I've just opened up their website and I have a phone number for their contact referral.
Okay.
And I'd love to share that with your listeners, if I may.
Be my guest, Sarah.
For more information about the acquired brain injury clinic that is offered through the San Diego College of Continuing Education, please contact Rosa Monzon, and it's Rosa. Her last name is Monzon, M-O-N-Z-O-N. And her number is 619-388-1952. Again, contact Mesa Campus at 619-388-1952. And even if it's just a conversation about what they offer or how one could receive support from their program, they may be because of, you know, COVID, they also, because they are a school just like any other, and they've had to continue their services through the last 2 years of COVID online. So perhaps they have, since my partner and I accessed their program about 15 years ago, maybe they have now opportunities for online services. So please contact them.
Thank you, Mara. Yes, that's good resource for people.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, and for those of you that are in the brain injury community and that are looking to create support, this would be a wonderful program to reach out to find out, to glean information from their curriculum and even grow your own curriculum in your own community, you know?
Hmm.
I mean, wouldn't that be exciting if some of you that are working through your acquired traumatic brain injury, once you've done some of your healing, are able to turn around and offer, you know, at your local community college or community center, some classes that you could draw from the curriculum at this acquired brain injury program. Yeah.
What a great idea. Maybe you are planning to start a world movement, Mar.
Let's do it.
Okay, well, that was very lovely, the conversation we've had so far. We still have a little bit of time left for this radio show. If you'd like to talk about any specific experiences or people that you know.
I would really like to, just maybe in these last few minutes here, I'd like to just acknowledge those people that are supporting the brain injury community, because there are so many. I'm sure there are not just doctors, but there are cognitive psychologists, there are recreational therapists, there are speech pathologists, there are there's so many people out there that can provide support to the brain, a brain injured person. And so for those of you that are working through the healing of your acquired traumatic brain injury, to stay curious about how the wellness community can support you. I definitely know that from witnessing those that are in the acquired brain injury clinic down in San Diego, witnessing them keeping their movement activities like yoga and different sports, keeping themselves involved in those things helps to reduce stress, helps to keep the brain building new neurological pathways. You know, movement is key. So I just want to be encouraging in that way to your audience.
Yes, that's a great idea. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because we all do need the experience of helping somebody else work through it to fully understand it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
My husband always said in school, because he had me there as the person he went over the stuff with, taught the stuff to, in other words, he understood it better himself.
Mm-hmm.
So he was extremely valuable to me in that he understood the stuff the first time around and could explain it. By explaining it, he understood it better. So we both helped each other out in school.
Yeah, I think just on that note of creating and finding support, that's a really big one in whatever, you know, because that allowed both you and your partner to continue to expand your life after your brain injury by having the support of one another. I'm curious what if I may ask you a question, I'm curious what in your what has been some of the most helpful support systems you've experienced through your healing of your acquired traumatic brain injury?
That's interesting you say that.
Hmm.
Because I'm thinking, you know, what have I done for support? Because I'm the one thing I like, oh, I don't need support. I can manage. But that's not quite true. I mean, we all definitely need support in our own way. I think at the time, having a family, having parents and a brother I could talk to, and I lived at the hospital, at the, you know, rehab secondary hospital, and I was allowed to go home on weekends and made that special permission for me. And just being around, quote-unquote, normal, if you want to call anybody, if they wanted to call their own family normal, but anyway, being around non-brain injured people helped me. And yet, as I said, being married to my husband, we're both able to support each other when either one of us goes into, you know, overload or freak out mode. And that's been a real support to me. And, you know, like you said, the friend that you met me through, the mutual friend, she's a huge support to me. Maybe it is because we both had, you know, brain injuries, but we do a lot of things together. We understand each other more deeply than, you know, normal people would.
Yeah, right.
Just
I'm curious, how did you, How did you and this other woman find each other? How did it happen? Was that serendipity, or did you find each other through a support program?
Well, through my business, actually, her husband was a patient in our chiropractic practice.
Wow.
And as soon as he got really involved with this girl, he dragged her in. That's how I met her.
Yes.
I've been treating her for years.
Well, I would say, well, two things from just listening to you say that. One, I'm going to, if you won't do it, I will. I'll hype chiropractic. I mean, as a non-brain injured person, it is very essential to me to keeping my head on straight, if you will. And I think also, right? And I think for those that are working through their acquired traumatic brain injury, that chiropractic is certainly another way to keep all of the electromagnetic synaptic connections, firing well. So I'm going to hype chiropractic for those of us that want to keep our brains in working order, whether you're brain injured or not. I know personally that chiropractic is incredibly helpful. And the second thing I wanted to say from what you shared is, be open to serendipity. Be open to how the universe actually can deliver what we need. I mean, for this woman to have come to your office through another patient, and now you two are friends, and the two of you being both brain injured, to have that kind of relationship with somebody else that has a brain injury, I think is incredible. It's gold. It is gold.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. And
it
for
really
you.
Is. Yeah, and it's funny how the universe works. I mean, I believe that what you need is out there within your grasp.
Mm.
You just grasp it, because I mean, when I went, when I was, 21 years old, just having graduated from college and joined the Peace Corps, I never expected to be in a hospital for a year and a half. And I never expected to go to chiropractic school. I mean, I was going to go to medical school of some kind, but I had no idea it was going to be chiropractic school until I had my brain injury.
Wow.
And met a chiropractor when I returned to Belize, met the one doctor in the country.
Wow.
And he
talk about
so
serendipity.
Much. I mean, if that wasn't intended, I don't know what was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know I've always been a hard-headed person. I don't listen to people when they tell me something the first couple times. And it gets worse when I need the chiropractic adjustment, just as my husband. But I don't tend to take any ideas outside of my own seriously at first. But so the universe just says, okay, we'll have a truck run over and knock her out, and then we'll get in there and we'll do our thing. And I could not have had a better outcome. I mean, sure, I could not be brain injured, not have to deal with all that crap, but I know me, and I know that, wasn't as likely to happen. So, okay, so I take the bad stuff, the brain injury and the results, but I get so much out of it. It's worked out so well for me to have had a brain injury.
And I think that statement right there is a golden statement for any human being, is, remembering or consider that life or the universe or however you personally describe it throws only what you can handle at you. So for those that you know, for those of us that are going through the experience, whether on the outside or the inside of this acquired traumatic brain injury experience, we're obviously human beings that can handle a lot. And if you want to see that as a positive, then please do, you know, that means that you're a human being that can handle a lot, that you're a human being that has quite a lot of capacity, no matter what layer you're in of your brain injury experience. Whoops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. The answer's out there, and if you are quiet, like you said, quiet and search for it, you can find it. If you're not quiet, you might have to have a traumatic experience to show it to you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Because I was never one to slow down and just let things come to me. No, I was going to go out and do it. Well, that's why I returned to Belize after my injury. My parents knew they weren't going to stop me. So my parents let me go back. Most people are amazed that I actually went back to Belize after my injury. But it's like, of course, I didn't finish where I started.
And
you know, we all have our certain set patterns that we operate in. And, you know, there are ways that the universe and or other people get through that. Tell you what you need to know, and you just have to be willing to accept it.
And that acceptance is a journey. That acceptance, that right, it's a lifetime. Any trauma, whether it's acquired traumatic brain injury trauma, or it's emotional trauma, or, you know, any moment that our life has been turned around from our expectation, that is one to stay open and gracious with. You know, I think that that's a big deal for every human being, and for those of us that are in the acquired traumatic brain injury world, whether we are brain injured or whether we are allies to those that have brain injury, you know, it's working through the pain, working through the suffering that we experience to attempt to find some meaning, attempt to find some lightness and some grace, to talk about it, to share it with other people so that we can attract the resources, attract the kindness of people. I think that is one of the ways that we can go about some of this healing together.
Yes. And you know, it brings me back to one great thing I learned in chiropractic school. Like, injuries can come in three different forms: physical, chemical, or psychological. They're all relevant, and they can all be dealt with in their own way.
Yeah, and then for those of us that are working all three, woo!
Yeah, pretty major,
right?
Huh?
Yeah.
So our time is up. I thank you very much for talking to me, Mara. Tonight was a beautiful conversation. You were wonderful, and I love you, and you're great. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. And thank you for allowing us to have a real open dialogue. Appreciate it.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Myra, and good night to anyone who's listening now or in the future. Good night. Mm-hmm.